It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage, I'm Steve Rosenblum. Fellow Suckageers will be on for the next hour, taking you right up to Oregon, Michigan, right here on The Score of this very radio station. Now we go to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. We welcome to the program a first-timer, Teo McKee. Teo Mackey, I don't know. I'm trying to speak English and I'm doing badly at it. Teo Mackey covers the Cardinals for the Arizona Republic, and you could read him on AZ Central. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So you wrote about the Los Cardinales and how they can win, or what will have to happen if they win. And it starts with Kyler Murray, and he's starting to look like the Kyler Murray who was a really good quarterback. Share with the class where Kyler Murray is in this rehab return to play arc.
Yeah, I mean, he's 100%, right, in terms of physically. He came back about a year ago this time, and he's fully back physically. But for much of this season, the Cardinals' passing offense really wasn't what you would expect. Like, you look at this team, especially in preseason, you're thinking, okay, healthy Kyler Murray, Marvin Harrison Jr., Trey McBride. You mean, you're talking about, Trey McBride's probably top three tight end in the league. Marvin Harrison Jr. came in with all the hype that he did. You've got some other, decent pass catchers, and then a healthy Kyler, and you're thinking, okay, this team should be able to throw the ball downfield. This should be a really good passing attack, and their defense is not good, so they need that passing attack to be able to win games. And, for 7 weeks, they were kind of hanging on. They were winning these close games, but they weren't impressing as a passing attack, and so none of it felt sustainable. It felt like, okay, well, they're getting lucky to win these games. Finally, last week in Miami against a really good pass defense, they finally came out and looked like this passing offense that was kind of promised during preseason. Trey McBride had 124 yards. Marvin Harrison Jr. had 111. They were trailing all game, and they were able to just score the ball through the air, and it was like, okay, finally, this is what this was supposed to look like. And so, like, now, if they can keep doing that, well, then, that changes everything. It's no longer, okay, well, let's see if they can grind out a few wins here and there. It's, okay, this team could actually be pretty decent, if Kyler Murray's passing for 300 yards a game like he did last week. Another good defense coming up this Sunday, so it'll be tough. But that's kind of the key to me for everything is whether they can keep that up.
Talking with Teo Mackey, he covers the Cardinals for the Arizona Republic, AZ Central. You can read him there. And talking about that passing game and Marvin Harrison Jr., there was such wild debate. Best player in the draft. He's got to go number one. He's got to go there. And the Bears had number one, and they did not take Marvin Harrison Jr. They took Caleb Williams, and now he's going to be going up against the team that drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. What has his season been like? And he, I know he presents a big target, and it's probably going to be Jalen Johnson, who is all everything on the corner. I don't know how that's going to go, but I suspect that's going to be the matchup. What has his season been like, and how the Cardinals deployed him?
It's been strange. Week two, he had a huge performance against the Rams, 130 yards, 2 touchdowns. Everyone's like, okay, Marvin Harrison Jr. is here. This is what he's going to do the rest of the year. the next five games, he was basically invisible. He averaged like 30 yards a game, wasn't really doing anything. The Cardinals have really been using him as a downfield guy. Like, they're just, you know, all his targets are 20 yards downfield. And so that has been a huge source of criticism. Well, why are they not getting this guy involved closer to the line of scrimmage, making sure that the ball is in his hands? You know, if you have a weapon like that, why are you not making sure that the ball is in his hands? I think it's, you know, a mix of factors that has prevented him from being consistently successful, you know, until this past game. You know, I think, yes, there's been this strange usage where they use him downfield instead of getting him involved closer to the line of scrimmage. There's also been times he just hasn't looked that explosive. He hasn't done that great of a job of getting open. He hasn't been winning, you know, making these contested catches. There's been some throws Kyler's missed. Well, it all came together on Sunday. Like, he looked really sharp. He was going against Jalen Ramsey for the most part in Miami. He was beating Jalen Ramsey, getting open often, made a bunch of really tough contested catches, two diving catches, a couple catches over guys. It just, like, everything clicked, and I was like, okay, this is what it should be. And so now it's a question. I think, you know, I think it falls on him more than anything else. It's, can he get open? Can he make these contested catches? As you mentioned, a really tough matchup. But he is, you know, he's searching for this consistency. He thinks that the progress of, well, now we're in week 8 of this thing and, you know, getting used to the speed of the NFL. He thinks that he's kind of found something here. We will see on Sunday.
Talking with Teo Mackey. He covers the Cardinals for the Arizona Republic, and you can read him on azcentral.com. We're talking Bears-Cardinals here. They play tomorrow in the desert. And the question about the Cardinals' offensive line, I'm not sure what shape it's in. You can't execute a passing offense if your offensive line is all rickety and leaky. And the Bears have not been great against the run the way they were last year. And Montez Sweat is not having the big sack year people expected, but they are still a defense that limits points. So scout the Cardinals' offensive line in terms of leakiness or whatever sack-hungry Bears fans might be expecting.
It's okay. So the Cardinals haven't allowed a sack in the last three games. But that is, like, I would say 90% due to Kyler. Like, he has just kind of been a wizard back there in the pocket. You know, he'll have a free rusher in his face and get away. So the Cardinals are, their starting right tackle Jonah Williams is out. Their starting right guard Will Hernandez is out, and so they've got backups on both starters on the right side of the line are backups, Tristan Colon and Kelvin Beachum. So that is an exploitable area, and there have been times that they've given up pressure. It's just a matter of pressure is getting to Kyler, and it doesn't matter because he's getting away. But it has impacted them in the run game as well. Last year, pretty much every game, James Conner was really good. And this year, it's been more of a roller coaster. He's had games of 17 yards, 24 yards, 50 yards, 53 yards, just kind of like, you know, he's had some big games, but then there's just been these games where he just can't get going. And it's mainly not him. It's mainly a lack of push up front. And some of these good defenses, Green Bay, Miami, Detroit, have been able to really restrict him. And then that makes things harder. That, you know, goes back to what I was talking about earlier, where then Kyler has to pass for 300 yards. He can't just be okay. He has to be really good.
One of the things that Caleb Williams has looked well in is the fourth quarter. He and the Bears offense suck in the first quarter for whatever reason. And it's kind of similar to the Cardinals. Just can't get started. I don't look unprepared. Like, I don't know what it is, but I know with the Bears, they're unprepared. They don't have a real, they have a game plan. They kind of figure it out. Caleb Williams kind of figures it out, and he's become a quality player in the fourth quarter, and he is able to make things happen. He's throwing from interesting, weird, dramatic angles, much like Mahomes. And I guess in that way, the teams are similar too. What's with the Cardinals' starts, and are they likely to go no huddle. Caleb does that well, and that tires out a defense and keeps them from substituting. Do the Cardinals take advantage of that? Do they go no huddle to keep a defense on the field in the desert and maybe not used to the heat, maybe getting worn out?
No, they're not a super up-tempo team. But it's interesting you mentioned the starts, because the first five games of the year, actually, they scored on their first drive. I want to say they scored a touchdown. Yeah, they scored a touchdown on their first drive the first five games. And then the last three, it's what you're saying. It's been these slow starts coming from behind. Last week in Miami, they were behind all game. Chargers, they were behind most of the game. Green Bay, they went down 24-0 early. So it's been like a tale of two seasons. And earlier in the year, people were, well, why can their offensive coordinator, Drew Petzing, why can he scheme up a start of a game so well and then he can't adjust? And now it's why can't he scheme up a start of a game? So I don't know what exactly has gone into that shift. But they need to get back to those early hot starts, because their last three wins have all required game-winning drives as time expired. One of them, the game-winning field goals with like a minute left. The other two were walk-offs. And it's like, yeah, that's nice and all, and they have confidence in their ability to pull off these comebacks, but like, you want to do it in a more sustainable way. You want to not be relying on a game-winning drive with 2 minutes left. And so, yeah, that does require kind of getting back to those hot starts that they had been having.
Talking with Teo Mackey, he covers the Cardinals for the Arizona Republic, and you can read it on azcentral.com. By the way, down there, I don't know if we have a mutual friend by the name of Dan Bickley. Do you know Dan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make sure. I didn't know what circles traveling. When you see him next or talk to him next, tell him that the guy who called him Q-Tip says hi. See,
right,
he used to be a bottle blonde that Dan Bickley did when he was in Chicago. And so Q-Tip seemed very appropriate. I just want to make sure that I'm remembered him. And I didn't know if you knew him. So there you go. So I have a question about the numbers don't look really optimistic. The defensive numbers don't make the Cardinals look stout for a Bears offense that's trying to look consistent in a lot of ways. They crow about the playmakers they have, and there were different games where they said, okay, well, this guy's got to have this game, and that guy had it, whether it was the Keenan Allen game or the Cole Kmet game or whoever needed it, DeAndre Swift, whoever did that. The numbers don't look particularly optimistic for the Cardinals being able to stop a talented Bears offense, even if it hasn't been consistent. Is there something in the numbers that we might be missing, or is the Cardinals defense that much of a high wire act or that much of a roller coaster?
Yeah, no, this is, they it's a simple matter of lacking talent. Like their whole staff changed over before last season, new general manager, new head coach, everything. And they just inherited a defense that was really lacking in talent. And so you look at their defensive front, basically, was already maybe the worst defensive front in the league coming into the season. Well, now they're without two free agent signings on the interior that are out for the season in Justin Jones and Bilal Nichols. They're without two starting defense, their two best pass rushers, BJ Ojulari and Dennis Gardeck, out for the season. Their secondary is okay. They don't have a true number one corner. They've got a couple of decent guys, Sean Murphy Bunting, Max Melton, Starling Thomas. Like, they're okay. But like, there's just, it's a simple matter of a lack of talent, and there's a few standouts. Garrett Williams, their nickel corner, is really good. Buda Baker is the star of the defense, free safety. Mack Wilson, linebacker, is pretty solid. But especially up front, it's a simple lack of talent. They just don't have guys who can win. They're really poor at creating pressure. When they rush with four. They can't blitz too much either, because their corners are going to get beat. It's not a good defense. That they're well coached and they've kind of been able to hold things together, but the lack of talent is glaring.
We often see, and we've written it, no doubt, or said it, that there's a an opponent comes in and beats you and gave the rest of the league a blueprint for how to do it. Is there that opponent, and what's the blueprint for beating the Cardinals, given the banged up way you describe their defense?
I guess you'd point to that Green Bay game. I mean, it wasn't close.
Because?
It wasn't close. Well, the number one reason in that game, as I mentioned, they just created zero pressure on Jordan Love. He had all day back there. He's just hanging out, waiting for guys to get open. So, like, if you can just protect the quarterback, give Caleb Williams all day back there, create some push in the run game. I mean, and then, as I said, get ahead early so that you're forcing Arizona to throw. And, yeah, they did it this past weekend. But generally speaking, they haven't been able to dominate through the air. They've required a balanced offense. So if you can get ahead early, force them to throw, force them into trying to do what they did successfully last week, but that was an aberration. For the most part, they haven't been able to successfully do that. So, yeah, get ahead early, protect the quarterback, just make life really easy on your quarterback if he's just standing back there in the pocket with all day.
Oh, sure.
Is kind of the way to make it work.
Oh, sure. We'll just make it up as we go along. We'll just all the fairy tale stuff. So one of the things about this matchup always has been that Chicago, the Bears travel well, but particularly in Arizona, in the Phoenix area, yeah, which is Chicago West in a lot of ways. And it generally has an effect on ticket prices. Have you guys tracked that?
Yes. I was just looking into this for my preview story. The get-in price, cheapest tickets, are $214. The Cardinals' next three games are all under $70.
So it's triple.
The price is triple their next three games for this game against the Bears. So I think that gives you an indication. I mean, this is a team. They played on Monday night against the Chargers a few weeks ago, and half the stadium was in Chargers blue. The Chargers get their stadium taken over at home. They played the Commanders, and the Commanders get their stadium taken over at home. State Place was filled with Commanders fans. I mean, when they played the Lions, it was basically a home game for the Lions. So, yeah, I mean, I'm expecting like 70% of the crowd to be Bears fans. It's gonna be pretty loud for the Cardinals on offense, I would expect, on Sunday.
So the Cardinals are going to have to go with a silent count at home.
You might not be off. Like, it could be really, really tough for them.
All right. We'll look forward to it. Teo, thank you for your time. Appreciate you jumping on today. Good stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. He's Teo Mackey of the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com, writing about the Cardinals, talking about the Cardinals. Bears play the Cardinals. Bears. You know who says Bears a lot on this radio station? That would be Mark Grody. Mark Grody used to be on this show. This is his show. Well, sort of a show. He used to be on this show, but he's not on the show, but he will be on this show. I thought he had much bigger names on the other line, but apparently he does not. Look forward to talking to him. Together again for the first time. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suck, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Have not heard that yell for a while. Look who's joining me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. It's the Mark Grody. Hi, Mark.
Is this the Saturday Suckage show, which you and I co-founded, that I no longer participate in on a regular basis?
Right. We can't track you down. You always have a bigger name on the other line. There's Dan Wiederer, or there's Spiegel and Holmes. There's Mully and Haw. You just, you got bigger names on the other line. And I get it. I don't want to make you work. We didn't even call a couple weeks, not even ask, because, like, no, man, the guy just, he's all over the place. He's Mr. Media. And,
well, you know, I've always said this, man. Hey, I'm just Marky Mark from the block. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know
you. I'm here for you. I am here for Saturdays. That's from whence I came. So I will never, ever forget the foundation that helped to build me, Steve. I am always available for you, so don't ever be afraid ask me to come on.
No. You know, I am today years old when I heard you refer to yourself as Marky Mark from the block. Yeah, that's it.
I don't know why it came out as Marky Mark from the block. I could have just said, I'm just Mark from the block, or Marky from the block. You got to add the Y, because, you know, the original reference is Jenny from the block. So.
Sure.
I'm Marky from the block, but I'm really not Marky Mark. I am Mark E. from the block. Some people do call me Marky.
Do they?
Yeah, usually just family members. I think one of my sisters-in-law calls me Marky. My cousin sometimes calls me Marky. So, yeah. Marcus Malarkus, I get that sometimes.
Family. Well, the Malarkey thing, especially. Yeah. And you were on, I need to update our audience, who maybe, there's some people apparently don't understand. We played the KRP cuts that we've been playing for over a decade here, because it's November of, you know, the turkeys are hitting the ground like wet sacks of wet cement. And then Mr. Carlson with ice, as God is my witness, thought turkeys could fly. So we played that because that's what we do. And then we apparently have people who are late coming to class and said, provide a little context. Was that KRP? Well, I don't know. If you need context, then you're listening to the wrong show. You're late for class. You need to catch up. So I need people to understand that Mark indeed was the co-founder of Saturday Suckage and the Wake and Bake Club. And we were together doing that. And then Mark got, again, a bigger name on the other line. And on this date, Mark, in 2016, this happened.
Two down. Cubs lead by a run. Tying run at first. Martinez at the plate. Bryant guards the line at third. Here we go. Montgomery's pitch. A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins.
And now you can do your Les Grobstein. I was there.
I was there. Not only was I there, I was, a lot of people were there. I was actually in the press box. I was sitting right behind Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer. We had Dave Miska in the booth. I don't remember if, I think Matt Spiegel was in there at that point, or had he retreated to his seats. I don't remember. Mitch Rosen up in that piece as well. So, yeah, man, it was an unbelievable moment. And I did, like, when that ball was fired across the diamond, Chris Bryant to Anthony Rizzo, I was just like, oh my God, it actually happened. And it happened on my watch. Talk about, like, timing in life. You know, my timing has not always been that good in life, but my timing, my time was that time. And that was just unbelievable. And, you know, for my standpoint, fitting for me, because my first love in sports, the reason I got into sports, like all of us, every single person that works at the Score is somebody that grew up obsessed with sports. My obsession was the Chicago Cubs. You know, that was it. Like, my first sports consciousness, probably right around 79-ish. You know, I was just 7 then, or whatever I was. Fast math is hard for me. But but following closely those bad early, like, just my young brain, like, I didn't miss a game. I didn't miss a pregame show. I didn't miss a postgame show, a 10th inning show, a True Value hardware commercial, a True Link fence commercial. And, you know, the 84 Cubs, of course, put it over the top, you know, having won the division for the first time in 39 years when it was a big deal to win the division. Going to, sitting in the bleachers as a little kid because my friend Ron Janik and his dad Bob Janik always got the $5 tickets, and he would send us to the front of the bleachers, and Dad would sit in the back, and we would just have a ball. So, I mean, it was, you know, there was something beautiful about being part of that moment, because it is exactly the Chicago Cubs that got me really, really big into sports. And obviously the 85 Bears had a huge influence on me as well. But yeah, it was just, it's emotional to even think about. And sometimes I'm like, God, that really happened? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's amazing when you think back to it and just everything that goes into it. And I know, like, everybody has their own story about that. Like Cubs fans that are listening right now that are diehards and have been watching obsessively as long as I was. Everybody has their story, and the meaning attached to it makes everything a little bit more tolerable that's even happening right now with the Cubs. You know what I mean? Like it's, you know, hasn't been good for a little while now with the Cubs, but they've got that. We don't have to sit here and do horrible math with the Cubs anymore and talk about 100 years and things like it's starting to get away from them a little bit now. I mean, it's now, you know, what, eight years since then. So once it hits 10 years, then we're like, okay, we're starting to get a little away from it. But I guess that might even be greedy to a certain point. But, you know, what an up and down game, and the emotions that went with it, from everything from Dexter Fowler leading off with a home run to Grandpa Rossi homering to the Rajay Davis nightmare of a home run when it almost felt like that's it. There's your Cubs historical moment. But the thing with the 2016 Cubs is that constantly throughout the year, I've always said this, there was this figurative sense of the Cubs players saying, stop it. Stop it. We ain't that. We're not 2003. We're not 1984. We're not 07 and 08 when they get swept each of those years. That was always the demeanor and the identity of that team. Like, what are you guys talking about? I don't want to hear about it, like curses or any of this crap. You know, these were some ballers in that locker room who all they did was look ahead right down to the last play and the throw from third base to Anthony Rizzo. And I'll say that one more thing. I remember, I'll give a big time assist or credit to Pat Hughes. I remember Pat Hughes very early in the season saying, and Pat is not one for hyperbole on the air or off the air. He simply is not. He's very, very real. He understands when the Cubs are bad. He understands when the Cubs are good. And I remember him saying to us, to Ron Coomer and I, this is different. This team has a chance. This could be the one. He knew, Pat had seen enough in his how many ever years of covering the Cubs, and probably even playing off of his experience just being a play-by-play guy for other franchises as well. I remember Pat knowing that was the team that had a legitimate chance to go all the way, and I'll be damned if they didn't.
I never heard you tell that story. Of all the times we talked about it, and we talked about your World Series ring and being there and leaving Saturday Suckage, our little boy has grown up, and the things you talked about in that booth, being in there, the cut we just played of Pat Hughes calling the final out 8 years ago today, and really, I never heard about that conversation.
Yes, and it was not on the air. It was off the air. I don't think Pat's going to care if I tell it, but yeah, I remember because I sat next to. I was fortunate enough to. Pat was my playing partner. Like we were seat buddies on all of the charter flights. That's a lot of you know, conversations with Pat Hughes, and you know, just and then you had Ron Coomer, Len Casper right in front of us, so we would all kind of share stories before we would all go into plane mode, which is, you know, sleeping, reading, eating, whatever it is one does on a plane. But there would always be a conversation. And Pat, you know, like I said, he's not prone to hyperbole. He didn't, you know, he's not one of these guys that talks about, hey, the Cubs got to sweep this series. The Cubs got to take two out of three. He doesn't do that on or off the air. But this team early on, and I know they got off to a fast start, so I'm not like, Pat was not even being a front runner. It was early. You know, he's like just looking at the collection of talent, seeing how they were winning early, and he was like, yeah, this team definitely has what it takes to be a World Series winner. I remember taking serious attention when he said that. I mean, they got close the year before, and there were signs pointing towards that, but there was another step to be taken, and that's what went down in 2016.
Mark Rohde is my guest, and we're reliving the anniversary of the Cubs. We have to have you on every November 2nd. Because or anything close to that when it's the Cubs winning the World Series, because you were there, same as we used to have Les on every Lee Elia day.
I was the only one in there. I don't care what Mark Giangreco's. I was there. I'm the only one who had it. And I don't even, yeah.
Yeah, because you're on, somebody has the obligatory Dave the Cat question. How's Dave the Cat?
Well, I just disturbed it. I actually feel bad. I just got home a little while ago, came in, and Dave likes to take my seat, the king's seat here in my bachelor pad. When I leave, he likes to snuggle up where my usual spot on the couch, and I came in, and I was he was sleeping. You know, cats are always kind of awake. Gave him a little pet. I said, no, don't worry. You don't have to get up. And so I moved down the couch, and I'm right where I'm sitting right now in my place, and Dave just got up, so I feel terrible. I don't know if I have awakened him by my aggressive speaking style, or what the deal is, but he is now, if I'm just to do the play-by-play, he is walking right now. He's near his food bowls. He is sniffing around like he's onto something right now. I don't know. I'll tell you what, the best thing, and people, cat owners know this, one of the best things about having a cat is that if you get a bug or a fly or a moth or anything in your place, it's over. It's over for that insect, because a cat will take it. Cat will mess with it for a while, play with it, but it's cooked. And right now, it looks like he's onto something. I don't know what's going on, but I will let you know if there's some. Sometimes I don't even know. Oh, I didn't see that little bug crawling. And Dave's like, "It's all good, man. I got it. I'm gonna take care of this thing. I'm gonna kill it." I don't like to let Dave eat everything, but you know, I'll let him screw around, and then he'll bring it to me, and then I'll throw it away. So cats are. It's a really good system, but that's at the least. Of the bonus points of having a cat. They're just wonderful animals.
Dave's on patrol. So can we talk bears? Or should we take a break make this segment too?
And then after the year 2017, yeah. I switched over to the Bears. And I mean, like, my timing could not have been better. It's been a blast covering the Bears. And this year, Steve, has been something, hasn't it?
It's been a thing. I was going to ask, because it's been a thing, the question to ask somebody, Mark covers the Bears for the Score and has and is up there at Hallis Hall. You want to take the pulse of the team, share with the class the pulse of the team? It's from the outside, it's, oh my God, there's no credibility in the coaches, no belief in the coaches. They were told not to be honest anymore. It's panic. They look stupid. They got a guy doing the twerking when he should be covering the guy in the back of the end zone. So what is the mood of the team as you saw the week progress?
If the glimpse that we get of the locker room is genuine, and when I say that, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that when the media is in there, they act differently than if the media wasn't in there. Of course they do. I mean, of course they're a little bit on guard when we are in there, but honestly, like, other than what players have been saying, and I'm sure you've been talking about it, and we've been playing it all week on the Score, what the players have been saying, whether it's Jalen Johnson or DJ Moore or Kevin Byard, you know, just being very honest about some of the critiques of the team, the locker room is exactly the same. There is no division in the locker room. I mean, in terms of, like, the locker room, the players are probably as close as they've ever been, just because it is a player-led team with the eight captains on it. So there's no issues there that I can pick up. And I was in there yesterday. I'm there every day. I was there yesterday, and it was the typical bouncy, good mood Friday. Guys shooting, you know, they got a cool basketball net set up in the locker room, and they were funning and smiling, and it felt like a regular Friday. So I have detected no disturbance in the force, if you will, in the locker room in terms of the players. And I think a lot of that probably is, you know, because they had their meetings. You know what I mean? They had from Tyreek Stevenson having his meeting with the team and saying what he said, essentially apologizing for blowing that game for them. And then these players have been allowed to speak out. And I'm sure that when the captains met with Matt Eberflus, there were probably a lot of real things that were said. There were probably some real critiques of the coach, and the coach probably had some critiques of them as well. Now, in terms of let's not air out every single piece of what's going on. I mean, clearly Matt Eberflus and or Ryan Poles to some degree said, let's cool it a little bit on the honesty, which just sounds ridiculous to say in just in life. Let's stop being so honest. But, you know, I think to that end, there's something there, but people want to know if the locker room, if, you know, there's a mutiny or if it's gotten out of control, if guys are clicking in terms of actually being in their own little cliques and trying to get out of the locker room early. None of that is going on right now. And I think that yesterday had a really good conversation. I don't know if you could find it in there. Maybe you got time to play it, but, or maybe you did already, but Keenan Allen, you know, we talked to him yesterday and he made a great point. And that was that we're catching these things early. And I know, like, we're almost halfway through the season, but that's in NFL terms. We know how fast things have changed. We've seen things change rapidly for teams in the past. We saw things change since, you know, the Indianapolis loss, when everything sucked that day, too. Coaching critiques, player critiques, Caleb Williams not good that day, throwing the ball 53 times, and then they went and won three games in a row. And that was after the Shane Waldron stuff came out, scripting the plays, be more mean as a coach, and they figured that out. And I think Keenan said something similar then, like, this is early. And yeah, it still is early. You can figure these things out. Things were clearly aired out between players and coaches. And guess what? After all of it, after everything that has happened this week, the Bears are still a 4-3 football team with a chance to go to 5-3. And then with this Arizona opponent, you know, the pretty even matchup, I think, at this point. And then the game against New England at home, which the Bears should be favored in. So while, yeah, it's a critical time here for the Bears, and wins are extremely essential, you still are over 500 with a real chance to win the next two straight games. You can't have the same sort of issues. You know, you can't, if there's anything similar, you know, there's bad coaching and bad play calls again, and you lose again, then I'll reopen it. But at this point, while it's been a bad week with a lot of bad things happening, which were all derived from last week's game, I don't think it's panic button time yet for this Bears team.
All right, well, we'll find out. And you go down there, basically it's going to be a Bears home game. I had a guy on from the Arizona Republic, covers the Cardinals down there, said Cardinals tickets, the get-in price for the Bears is three times other games for the Cardinals. That's what it's going for online. Wow. Three times. Yeah. Should be a Bears-centric crowd. And he laughed, but he said it might be true when I suggested that the Cardinals are going to have to use the silent count in their own stadium.
Oh, man, that would be incredible. Yeah, sort of like London. I mean, I even heard it, and I know there were definitely more Washington fans than Bears fans in D.C., but I heard the Let's Go Bears chants coming in loud and clear, man. Bears fans make their voices known, and there'll be a ton of annoying Bears transplants. And then, you know, I've gone on many of these trips to Arizona. I can't remember the last time they went, but, you know, I did doing sidelines there. I remember going on a plane, going there, out of Midway, being on the plane with all Bears fans, and it was just a blast because everybody but me was drunk on that flight, and they made an announcement on the flight. I'll never forget it. We are out of Bloody Mary mix. Actually, over the PA.
Bears fans on a plane. We're out of Bloody Mary mix.
It's like everybody booed. It's like, okay, yeah, out of the Jack Daniels. But it could not. And it was a fun-loving drunk plane. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a nasty drunk. It was a fun singing songs. We're going to watch a Bears game crowd. So it's going to be fun to watch. And I do love Bears fans.
Oh, yeah. Bloody Berries. That's what they are.
Bloody All
right.
Bears.
All right. We'll look forward to hearing you on every other show during
yes.
the week. Thank
take
you.
Take the North, baby. Take the North.
Take the North podcast with Dan Weider.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
He's got bigger names on the other line.
I can't believe I've spent this much time with you,
that's
Steve.
That's his
this
next
ridiculous.
Podcast. Bigger name on the other line. Thanks, Mark.
See you, buddy. All right. Later, Steve. I miss you, buddy. Talk to you later.
Yes, you too. Love you, Mark Grody. We'll take a break. We'll come back to close out the show. We'll fire more shots at Shane Waldron and his failure. This is Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suck at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Uh-oh, time got away from us. That way, more time to bash Shane Waldron. We'll have to do it next week. If nobody important listened to this show, then I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suck at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.